Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Jordan Calhoun, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
Jordan, today we are learning how to strategically utilize our downtime.
That's right, we are. And on that topic, Alice, what if I just take the rest of the pandemic off? Would that be doable? I need some revival time. I need some time, Jordan, to really refresh. Like, once the pandemic is over, I can come back to work. I think that's a fair deal.
We'll at least finish this episode. What do you say?
Okay. All right. Let's do that.
Okay. Here today to talk with us about making the most of non-work time are writers Max Frenzel and John Fitch.
But what we want to add to the picture is also encourage people to think about their rest ethic. And especially right now, this is more important than ever, where just boundaries are disappearing. People are working from home. So you need to actually be very, very conscious of your time off.
Max and John are authors of the book Time Off, a practical guide to building your rest ethic and finding success without the stress. A project in which they both explored the ways that they take time off in order to improve creativity and productivity. And they found some pretty compelling research on the topic.
So Jordan, what do you like when it's time to unwind? Are you good at stepping away from your computer or not so much?
Honestly, no. I mean, the way that I structure my day is basically I don't ever leave work. I mean, sort of literally and metaphorically, since I'm working from home, obviously. I work throughout the day and the evening. There's not really a set time off where I disconnect. I'm literally on Slack 24/7. And it doesn't mean that I'm always checking Slack, but it basically, like, my sort of dichotomy between my work hours and my non-work hours are when I feel obligated to be responsive versus when I'm still going to be responsive, but I don't feel the obligation to do it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What about you? I noticed you on Slack at all hours.
Yeah. I mean, that window is always, I have a Chrome window that's always set to my work stuff. And like, there's no beginning or end to work. It's just like when I am there. It's probably not healthy. Is that healthy?
Not so healthy. Michaela's shaking her head. No. Jordan, this is an intervention.
I think this is the proper episode for me.
You need to take a little break. You need to step away.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe the people for that will be, right here on this episode, and Max and John can help me out.
We're going to find out. So John and Max, welcome to The Upgrade.
Thanks so much for having us.
Good
you've,
to have
you've,
you.
You've upgraded my day with starting it this way.
Well, this is a topic I absolutely love. I'm really looking forward to diving into talking about time off and how we can actually sort of utilize that to improve our lives and appreciate how useful it is for our productivity as a whole.
So tell us why we need a book about taking time off. You think we'd be good at it, but we're clearly not.
Yeah, I mean, Max and I are a part of this. We've all been a part of adding to this whole culture of busyness. You know, this concept of if you're visibly busy, you are effective, where if you step back and think about it, quantity of input never guarantees quality of output. And I look at it as we need a new vocabulary for time off, because prior to our book, I found that people appreciated time off, but their connotation of it was very limited. It was typically just holiday or vacation. Whereas, it's a daily practice, a weekly practice, and it involves not just these macro forms of time off, but micro forms of time off. And so I think our goal was to just remind people that the connotation of it was much more expansive than we default to.
Absolutely. And one concept that we introduced in the book, it's probably not, we didn't come up with this, but we really want to stress that and make people think about it, is this idea of a rest ethic. Because everyone has a work ethic, everyone's aware of their work ethic and prides themselves in a work ethic. And that's great. It's good to have a good work ethic, although some people should reassess what that actually means. But what we want to add to the picture is also encourage people to think about their rest ethic. And especially right now, this is more important than ever, where just boundaries are disappearing, people are working from home. So you need to actually be very, very conscious of your time off. And it's a bit ironic because you actually need to take time off to first realize how valuable time off actually is. And yes, we wrote a book about time off and leisure, but it's not a book about being lazy or slacking off. This pure rest component is a part of it, but it's only a small part of it. A lot of good rest and a lot of good time off that actually gives you recovery, gives you detachment from work, but also fills your life with meaning, is actually very active. But yeah, basically with this idea of a rest ethic, we want to encourage people to become more conscious about it and then also really plan it and be as serious about it as they are with their work ethic.
And Alice, this is a good point that there are a lot of books out there, in fact, a ton of them behind Max in his office on work ethic. How to get things done effectively. Awesome. There's no lack of those types of books. And that's as we saw it through the work ethic, rest ethic analogy. Look at breath. And I know you had a recent podcast episode looking at breath. Well, we look at work ethic as inhale and rest ethic as exhale. And there's not a lot of books about exhale. And we thought there needed to be more. So we added one to the list.
How the hell did we get here, where we don't talk about the exhale? Is this a uniquely American problem? I feel like whenever I talk to my international friends and I tell them how many days we get off or how much vacation I take, they either laugh at me or they're horrified. Like, there's no in between there. How do we get to the point where, you know, is there a particular history where we only talk about our work culture and we have this performative busyness? I think of one of the most ridiculous, frustrating stories was a friend of mine used to leave her jacket on the back of her chair in the office back in the before times when we went to an office to suggest to her boss that she was just in the bathroom, like whenever she was gone for any amount of time. Like, how do we get to the point where we want to show that we're working all the time and that that's a virtue?
So in our book, we have an entire section called Time Off Throughout History, What Went Wrong. So first we had the beginning of time. So time, even as a concept, was created. Then we had valuable time, necessary work, noble leisure. So our relationship to leisure was good. We saw it as noble. Time off was seen as like the pinnacle of society, and it was top of mind. Then we entered a state of visible time where productivity became king. Then time became sacred, work became noble, and leisure became a sin. And then after that, things got even worse because now God, your boss, and everyone else owns your time. And I look at it, at least in the Western context, that it's when we started to industrialize human beings and machines. There wasn't really a line between the two. We were machines, right? We were the cogs in a wheel. And of course, we've created more automation now, but yet we're still stuck to that concept, that dogma. And then we talk about visible time 2.0, busyness is king. And this is a problem because we took this concept of visible busyness, which, you know, I'm not trying to say it wasn't a fair point. I mean, back in the day, if any of us were entrepreneurs running a factory and humans were an important component of that, if a person stopped working, the factory line stopped working. So if you weren't visibly busy, that was an issue. Well, many decades later, we're more in a creative economy, a knowledge economy, yet we still take that concept of management and are people working or not with us. So we didn't unlearn that for the most part. And that has now led to, again, in a state of knowledge work and creative work, we actually, you know, Henry Ford predicted that we would be eventually, not long after his era, working much, much less than a 5-day work week in an 8-hour workday. Yet look at it now in an age of stress and burnout, we've actually increased way beyond what he was hoping. And he's just one example. And Max really dove deep into this chapter. And I don't know if you have any other way to tell the story.
No, I think that was a wonderful summary. But I think going back to Ford, so he in the 1920s, he actually reduced the working time dramatically compared to what was previously the case, because he realized his workers, his factory workers, are just more effective and make fewer errors if they work less time. So he introduced this idea of the 8-hour workday and the 5-day work week, which we still follow today in principle. Actually, in truth, a lot of us today are working more than Ford's factory workers in the 1920s. But it gets even crazier if you think about exactly what John mentioned. Today, we're knowledge workers, we're not factory workers anymore. And thinking that you can work as long and staying mentally fit and sharp, as long as you can stay physically sharp, that's just ridiculous. And I've been working in AI for a long time. John's been working in automation. And a lot of people are worried about AI taking over jobs. And that's probably going to be the case. But I actually say we shouldn't be worried about it. We should be embracing this because it'll free us up to focus on the creative and empathetic aspects and the things that make us truly human. But the people who will suffer the most are those who pride themselves in their busyness. Because no matter how hard you work or how many hours you put in, you're not going to outbusy the machines. So those people who will thrive in this future of work, those are the ones who already like recognize their creative component and really focus on what makes them more human. And I think that's wonderful, actually, because that's what ultimately gives us meaning in our lives. And what people currently see as extracurricular activities or volunteerism, that will be the focus off the work of the future. And I think that's wonderful.
So tell us how this kind of manifests in real life. How do we start to kind of cultivate a rest ethic and see that happen throughout the day?
So I think I like to look at it as I'm not trying to change anyone. You know, radical change is hard, whereas incremental change, you know, classic behavioral psychology. So, you know, what are your time off practices right now that energize you, bring you enthusiasm? And again, that does some, for some people, that's something very passive and relaxing. For others, I know Jordan, it's, and I'm the same. I go to the gym. Some would say, well, that's not time off, but it is. It is for me. I'm stepping away from the actual work. It's an active form of time off. And so I would say, you know, assess and audit what things do you do now that aren't work, but bring you meaning, increase your enthusiasm, and analyze, you know, when do you do those? Could you do more of it? What's keeping you in the way of cultivating more of it? And then lastly, look, all of us are a part of a team in some way, whether it's your direct job or if you're a freelancer, you have clients and you're kind of a team. You know, just start by asking people, what do they do in their time off? Usually we just default, hey, let's go right into the project. Hey, let's talk about the deadline. And it's all about the work ethic, work, 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 work. Whereas if we take time to actually be curious of what people do in their time off, you'll see like people's eyes light up. And they'll talk about their hobby or these things they do outside of work. And that's like the greatest fuel for any team, is that essence of them, the parts of us that make us interesting. And I found that in my professional career, prior to writing this book, those conversations didn't happen. And so talking about them at work, well, I think help people realize that, wow, what Alice or what Jordan or what Max does outside of work actually makes them really interesting. So we should honor that more. And perhaps there's a tiny shift in our culture after having that conversation. So if I have a very simple workshop, anyone could run it. You just get your team together. You have people maybe grab a few photos so they can visually describe what their like top hobbies and time off practices are. They talk about why those bring them meaning. And then after each person does that, you then brainstorm, hey, how could we bring each person's creativity and how could they remix what they get out of that practice into our actual work? Meaning you can now look at what they do outside of work is actually valuable to the end goal of the project or work, instead of making it this like quiet thing we can't talk about because it's not work. So that's a little hack, if you will, that I've seen really change the minds and vocabulary of teams.
Totally. John, you'll love this. I had a really busy day today with tons of meetings, but by far the best moment in all of that was one colleague of mine recently got into bread baking. And he asked me about tips on bread baking, and it totally made my day, and I could see how happy he was. And it really speaks to your point. And just to add to the idea of how people can find their rest ethics. So one thing we believe is that there's not a one size fits all approach. So it's really personal. And even it changes for one person over time. My rest ethic now does not look the same as it did a year ago. Well, things have changed completely anyway, but even without a pandemic, it's a constantly evolving process. And what we wanted to do with the book is show many different examples. So we have these deep dive chapters, which go into different ideas of like topics of time off. There's a chapter on sleep, chapter on solitude, creativity, and so on. And then within those chapters, we have these profiles highlighting people who were extremely successful because of their use of time off, not in spite of it. And with those profiles, we wanted to cover a large variety of people. We didn't only want to highlight the top performers that everyone knows, the famous people. We do have them in the book as well, but they're not necessarily the most relatable. We also cover normal people, people in the middle of the corporate hierarchy, and just pick different examples from their rest ethic. And every profile finishes with a very clear practice where we really tell the reader, okay, you read this person's story, you see how it impacted their life. Now, here's a very practical thing you can do in your own life to try and make it your own. See if it works. If it doesn't, try something else. That's cool.
Who's the laziest one? I use that word facetiously, obviously. But who has the strongest rest ethic that you wrote about in the book?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that's like, and you could remix it, but anytime you feel stuck in your creative work, is just step away. Literally just close the laptop, get away from the desk, and then you can go do whatever you want. Maybe that's sit on the... But I like this idea of like intentionally not work. Like I'm at a point where it's like not productive anymore. And this is a really important point because this changed as a type A personality. This changed everything for me. And I'm glad our editor challenged us to answer the question, like, why is time off essential? Like, yeah, it's nice, but why is it essential? And we looked through the lens of the creative process. And the creative process has four steps. You have preparation, incubation, illumination, and then verification through any creative endeavor we do. And so preparation is like work. It's like getting prepared, coordinating, workshopping. And then you have the last one, verification. It's like shipping something, releasing it, a prototype or, you know, your art, whatever it is. And then you see, is it worth a damn? But if that's only two of four, that's 50%. The two in the middle, you have to step away to incubate and then therefore illuminate, aha, light bulb moment. So when I realized that time off was around 50% of my creative process, I started taking it seriously. And it changed my vocabulary. Instead of saying, hey, I'm closing my laptop or I'm stepping away, it's not because I'm lazy. It's that I'm actually going to hire, I'm going to delegate this to my subconscious so that it can incubate. And whether I go cooking or go work out or go hiking, whatever my time off practice is, it's actually an investment in the creative process. And that allowed my type A personality, which ultimately wants to achieve something, I see it as a strategy. It's no longer like a nice to have to prevent burnout. I mean, it does prevent burnout. But for me, it's always been, I'm going to form new connections by stepping away from the work.
Totally. I mean, think what creativity is. It's really connecting those distant dots. And if you're constantly grinding things out, if you're always too close with your head in the problem, you're not going to connect those distant dots. You really need to step away and kind of treat your subconscious with this long leash and let it run freely so it can do the work for you. And it's really, as John said, kind of giving your subconscious the time to do this by itself is such a wonderful process, right? You just need to actually allow it to do that. And it presents you with this gift of insight and innovation.
So you're sort of putting procrastination in a whole new light now. So it's okay.
Yes, but not all procrastination is created equal.
No, it's all good. You just said it. You said it's all good.
You know, I think this, we have this concept of delay. So like intentional delay. And vocabulary matters. And, you know, you can remix these words, like instead of procrastination, I can call it like delay or incubation. And that's I think it's honoring it as it should be. versus this thing that is usually looked down upon. Because again, why is it looked down upon historically? Because we're obsessed with visible busyness. If you're not doing the thing, you're not doing it. It's like, no, you cannot be doing the thing and actually unlocking the greatest thing you need to do the thing. And so, yeah, time off is as important as the time on.
Hi, I'm Danielle Belton, editor-in-chief of The Root.
And I'm Maisha Kai, managing editor of The Glow Up.
And this September, we're excited to bring you The Root Presents It's Lit.
It's Lit is a podcast where we talk about all things literature, literally.
More specifically, Black literature.
And we have some incredible guests lined up, including Nicole Hannah-Jones.
The last thing I want is us to produce anything like the Green Book.
Ijoma Alu.
Why this book? You know, why aren't we all picking up the How to Burn Down the System book? You know, like, why can't we do that right now?
The venerable Claudia Rankine.
I can't really separate the subject out from the structure. And the two things for me are actually what makes writing exciting.
And so many more brilliant Black authors, writers, and thought leaders.
We're speaking with some of the most distinguished voices in Black literature about their work, the books that influence them, and a lot more.
So please join us every Friday for some thought-provoking conversations. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep it lit.
Whoop, whoop.
Should people unplug? You know, you guys mentioned your technology-focused careers, and I feel like technology always comes into this type of conversation. We've all read or heard all sorts of advice about, you know, going for a hike and unplugging, or being on vacation and not checking your email. And I'd love to hear advice that our readers can use on how they can balance technology in their lives and how you use technology. Is it always going to be you should unplug and completely detach? In the interest of full disclosure, I hate that advice. Like, I don't think it's practical at all. Like, I'm not going to go for this long nature hike without my phone. Like, I just don't think that's safe or practical. And when I'm on vacation for a while, I am going to check my email because I don't want to be overflowed with 1,000 emails when I get back. So it just ends up being anxiety inducing if I don't check, you know, what's going on every now and then, because I'm just wondering, you know, is the house on fire? So how can people manage or sort of balance technology in their lives while they're trying to restore themselves and take that time off?
Yeah, I think you're really highlighting a good point. It's just general unplug and disconnect. I mean, sure, it's great advice on the surface, but it's not very practical. It might just cause even more anxiety, as you said, right? I think the key with technology is to be conscious of how you use it, right? Not just mindlessly end up just pulling your phone out of your pocket, checking your email and putting it back and not even realizing that you did it or that you did it 5 minutes ago already and there's absolutely nothing new. So use technology, but be conscious about it and reflect. Just go through your apps, for example, and see, hey, which of this actually adds to my quality of life and how much am I sacrificing in return for using this thing? And thinking about the value of these different things. And as you said, John and I have spent a lot of basically our careers in technology. And actually, funny side story, we wrote this book entirely remote. Like, we spent hundreds of hours on this, but John and I have never met in person to this day. We wanted to after the book launch, but well, now travel is not really a thing anymore. So this entire thing was done and enabled by technology. So it's an absolutely wonderful thing. But we use technology on our terms and we use it very, very consciously. And sure, it's totally fine if you procrastinate and just scroll down Instagram for like 10 minutes. That's totally cool. And sometimes that can even be what you need to just recover for another work session or get that bit of detachment. That's fine. But just be conscious about it, if it actually adds value to your life or not.
Yeah, we've got this subchapter that the words really mean a lot to me, and it's on practicing digital minimalism. So I like remixing things if that's not apparent already. And if you look at the Marie Kondo concept of tidying up, well, you know, she doesn't say empty out your entire house, which I look at as the equivalent of, hey, don't take your phone with you. It's more of go through your items and really ask, does this bring me joy? Does it bring me anxiety, worry, distraction? And then, you know, filter accordingly. And that has been my go-to practice. It's, and just like the Marie Kondo method, it's not a one-time thing. You kind of have to do it because you start building up other apps. I like trying out apps, but practicing that digital minimalism where I'm really only choosing to use the tools, like my toolkit is of the essentials that not only bring me joy, but allow me to be the most effective and creative. And I've had to let go of certain applications and programs that on the surface were like everyone else is using it and that's okay, but it didn't serve me. And I had to reflect on that before deciding to take it off of my phone. You know, there's another book called Make Time by the authors of the book on design sprints. And they have this concept of getting rid of infinity pools, which was huge for me. So any app that literally by design, it will endlessly give you content. What's really cool is like Medium, for example. I really like Medium and I had to get rid of it for a while because it became an infinity pool for me. But they changed it. They made a feature, a primary feature that it just gives you 5 articles for the day. It has a recommendation engine, but it's like, these are these 5 and that's it. Of course, I could blow down that wall and access the infinity pool, but it has a button there that says done for the day. And I just think that that's brilliant product design that considers this digital minimalism. I can still observe 5 awesome articles rather than 500 without me like being conscious of it. So whatever, when you hear digital minimalism, I hope that gives you a little feeling of like, oh yeah, that'd be nice to have a little more essentialism with my toolkit. And then, you know, just go through that kind of Marie Kondo method through your apps and keep only the ones that are serving you.
I've been really struck during the whole pandemic by the fact that, you know, our commutes are gone, right? We have so much more, ostensibly so much more time. I'm not feeling like an ounce of relief from that. Like I used to have an hour commute one way and you'd think I would be like, I've got loads of time now. I can paint and bird watch. I don't know.
You don't have anything to show for your pandemic time? You didn't learn to knit?
Right.
I did try to learn to knit. I gave up very quickly, like in record time for me. I don't know if this is a universal thing that none of us are kind of experiencing that relief, but
yeah.
What are we doing?
Well,
wrong?
I mean,
I'm
sure Max has some thoughts, but I mean, I first, you know, we're now having people reach out to us to help their company cultures talk about rest ethic and time off strategically, which I think is lovely. But before I prescribe anything, I guess I'm always curious, like, okay, you got that hour or 2 hours back because you're no longer commuting. What has filled those 2 hours? Like, what are you doing in those 2 hours that make you feel like you're not getting time off?
Just working more.
Sure, sure.
Or endlessly scrolling through Instagram. That's the other thing.
You know, behavior change is really hard. And I know like rituals help me. So I have an app that I use called Stoic. It's like a journaling app. And it's on my iPad, which is in airplane mode when I start the day. And it asks me like really hard questions. And sometimes it takes me a full hour to like really answer that prompt. But that's like in my former commute time, I do that. And sure, that's active, right? But what's nice about it is it doesn't have to be an app. You could just have a journal. I know there's lots of journals out there that you can buy that already have prompts. And that moment of reflection is really important for me, at least, and maybe for others before the rest of the world comes at you. Because you're right, now the inbox is right there when you wake up and it'll bring you right in because you're enthusiastic about the work. Whereas I've found that an intentional reflection practice is easy to repeat and it's gifted me so much because it gets me in the right internal landscape. Like I get to like, make sure my internal landscape is good before I let the rest of the world determine what it is. And so that's been one that, because I feel you, I, you know, in my work, it all of a sudden became all virtual and it's very easy to start the day immediately jumping into a workshop or what have you, but kind of unapologetically just focusing on my reflection practice has been huge for me.
I even wonder if that hour of commuting was in itself rest time, right? I was reading and listening to podcasts, and I wouldn't have called it fun, but, you know, now thinking back on it, I am a little nostalgic for my subway time.
It's definitely forced downtime. Like, you can't really do much besides read or nap or, you know.
Steal. Yeah, you're just steal stuck. From people. That's what I would do.
Just slowly go through
work
the car
my
and pickpocket.
Just work on that.
Your skills are getting rusty over this pandemic.
Oh, like, I can't steal. This has been productive.
One last thing I want to know, which probably isn't a fair question. For the average listener, let's say that they're working the normal 40 to 50 hours a week, how often should they take time off? What is the correct answer for how much time off someone should take and how consistently?
The correct answer is that there's no correct answer. It's very personal and you have to totally figure that out for yourself. And that completely changes from day to day. That changes from what different practices make up your rest ethic. I mean, there's so many factors to it. Some cases you might actually need a long sabbatical to really reset you. I mean, not everyone can do that. Not everyone can afford that. In some cases, just a minute might be enough for you. In some cases, you want to have that several times a day. Other cases, you want to have it in different cycles. So I think becoming aware of cycles and timing, I think that's very valuable with everything kind of related to rest ethic, being conscious of how you use your time and being conscious of what your current cycle is. That might be an hour on, 10 minutes off. It might be like a full day head down and then take some longer time off. But yeah, I think my answer is that there is no one correct answer to this question.
Yeah. And I get inspired by the question is I wish that teams and leaders would have this discussion more often. You know, we workshop how we work so much. Why don't we workshop how we rest? Because we mentioned earlier in the episode, we are still with the dogmas from when cars were being invented of like the default work concept. It's like, why? What, you know, it hasn't a lot of things changed. Therefore, we can change up our oscillation between work and leisure. And that's a leadership discussion. That's a team discussion. And so, you know, I like to advise each person, again, in that easy workshop I mentioned of each person talking about what they do in their time off and how valuable that is. That's step one. Step two is to then say, how do we cultivate more of this so that we're preventing burnout and we're honoring our time off? And that's a team discussion. And I hope it would eventually lead, kind of bringing it back to your question, that how much time? More time than now, because most likely an organization is defaulting to an old concept that's, I'm not saying that it's flawed. I mean, there's, you know, certain industries that probably still have to fall within these lines of the 9 to 5, but most of us don't do anything that was around the time that concept was invented. So why are we still following that concept of time on, time off? You know, these are just shifts in culture. It's not saying we're not focused on still doing good work, but like, why are we still following a manufacturing based concept of time if we're in an entirely different industry? So that's something that kind of meta that I would hope teams is how do you workshop to increase more time off for each individual on the teams, because it will increase enthusiasm and it'll do all the great things that we've been talking about today.
Increase it and also allow the flexibility for each person to find their very own unique work style and rest style. I think that's also really important and leaders should really put more focus on that, especially as we're shifting more towards knowledge work and creative work, where this is so important and so crucial.
All right, Jordan, you get the rest of the day off.
Beautiful. This whole podcast interview was a plot to give myself a vacation.
Awesome.
Message received.
John Max, good work.
Thank you guys so much. This was great.
Well, this has been amazing, and I'm really grateful for the awesome questions.
Hey, Brian, did you know the world sucks right now?
You know, I'd kind of noticed that because, yeah, every day I wake up, I'm like, is this really real life? I would say yes, it sucks.
Yeah. There's a lot of sucky things in the world right now, and we're started a new podcast that's going to fix it.
So I guess we should probably introduce ourselves. My name is Brian Kahn. I'm the managing editor at Earther.
And I'm Alex Kranz, the senior consumer tech editor at Gizmodo.
And we're here to tell you about a new podcast that we're doing at Gizmodo focused on...
everything! Fixing it! Making it better! Making the world suck a little less. It's called System Reboot. And we're covering a lot of important stuff that we think is really worth hearing and learning about.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of systemic failures across the country and around the world. That, you know, the pandemic has really highlighted them, but they've been there all along. And we thought, you know, there has to be a better way to do things.
There has to be, from the disastrous food supply chain issues we witnessed really early on in the pandemic, to the absolutely shoddy internet that we also saw early on and are seeing a lot more of right now as everybody returns to school. We're going to be diving into the systems that are failing us across the board.
And more importantly than examining the things that are failing, we're actually going to talk about what we can do to fix them. That's the whole system reboot idea.
Yeah, positivity, man.
Yeah, it's kind of novel. We're going to try this out and see how it goes. But you know what we're going to be doing is talking to experts who've spent a lot of time researching these issues and coming up with solutions.
So if you don't want to believe that the world is going to end in 2020 and you want to hold on to just a little bit of hope, please check us out.
And join us on our quest to fix what's broken.
Time for Upgrade of the Week. Every week we talk about that one tiny thing making a big difference in our lives. John, what's your upgrade this week?
So Jordan might be not a fan, but I've done tech Shabbats, which are like a weekend long without screens. That's pretty extreme. And they are awesome. Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge fan of them. But I've been doing these like afternoon tech Shabbats just from like, and I do some deep work on the computer. And then at about 1 o'clock from then on until the rest of the evening, I'm off of screens and I'm just, you know, in analog books, journaling, writing, working out outside. And I find that it's awesome because when I show up to the computer or the tablet the next morning, I'm like actually looking forward to it. I kind of miss it instead of like, ugh, I'm tired of opening you up. So that's been a nice afternoon practice of just stepping away from the screens.
You're not anyone's emergency contact, I hope.
No, I would not be a good one.
Okay, good.
Oh my God. Okay. Max, what's your upgrade?
Mine's a bit of a weird or random one. So both John and I really love cooking and it's a big part of our rest ethics. So I thought maybe I'll get a cooking one in. I recently rediscovered cacao nibs. They're amazing. So they're basically just crushed cacao beans and you can use them for literally everything. And it makes everything more amazing. I use them when baking bread. I just mix it in there, maybe with some beer as well. Tastes absolutely amazing. Just sprinkle it over anything you make. It's amazing in yogurt with some honey, whatever. Put some cacao nibs in. It's going to be delicious. And apparently it's a superfood as well and packed with nutrients. And if you're into cold brew coffee, I really, really love coffee. And that's a big part of my daily rituals. If you like making cold brew coffee, it's a really slow drip over several hours. Grind the cacao nibs up into powder or paste and add it in with the coffee. It tastes absolutely amazing.
Nice. I've put them into smoothies, but that's about it.
Ooh, that's great too.
Yeah. Jordan, what's your upgrade?
Okay, so I live in New York City, and a few weeks ago, my upgrade of the week was waking up at 5 a.m. when they reopened gyms just to see what the gym situation was like. And I would run to the gym, I would get there right when they opened the doors, and I would be there and have a really efficient time in this, what turned out to be a very unsafe environment. So I'm undoing that upgrade. Don't do it. Don't even bother. Even if it's 5 a.m, I did it for a few days. It did not work out. But instead, what my upgrade is now is... using the Instagram algorithm that thinks or knows that I pay attention to fitness content, and I'll sign up for a free trial for whatever it offers me. Whatever ad I get, I sign up for a free trial, and then I have that for a week, and I'll just try a different fitness app. And there's 2 quadrillion fitness apps out there vying for your attention. And if you try a new one every week, I mean, I have several lifetimes worth of workout stuff if I just let the algorithm do the work for me. So go ahead, advertise to me, algorithm.
Jordan, I like it. In a virtual happy hour, someone says, "Say, Jordan, what do? You could say, "I'm a trial user."
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going on my resume now.
That is amazing. I have to say the algorithm on Instagram has been cracking me up because it went from, I was getting these like mobility apps, like get more flexibility. And then something in the algorithm was like, this lady is approaching her sunset years. Cause now it's like chair exercises, exercises while lying down. Or it's just like an animated, you know, image of a woman with like silver hair.
It's amazing how sometimes it gets it really, really wrong. Like for weeks, my explore page was nothing but like fishing and penguins. And I didn't click anything that was fishing related, but it really was convinced that I was like an angler. So it was just giving me a lot of fishing content. Now I've slowly trained it to get more to like sports and stuff. But yeah.
That's amazing.
Alice, what's your upgrade this week?
All right. I'm also going with something chocolate-based. I want to talk about the joys of the seasonal treat. And I don't actually know if this is national, certainly not international. It might be New York or East Coast based, but the Malomar. The Malomar is a delicious cookie. Do you have this in Austin, John?
No.
I didn't know they still existed.
They still exist. But they only come out when the weather starts to get cold because it's a chocolate-covered marshmallow on top of a cookie. And I guess because when it's warm out, the chocolate is going to melt or something. They've made this seasonal. So it's like it comes out when the weather starts to get cold. And my husband purchased some, and it made me really happy.
Upgrade.
That is amazing. That's awesome. I had no idea that they still made Malamars.
Although yeah. I'm somewhat skeptical. I was once very disappointed by a New York cookie recommendation. All my friends were raving about it. I think they were called compost cookies. And I was in New York and I tried a compost cookie. And yeah, it was good. It was a cookie, but it was not like life-changing. So.
Yeah, it's a cookie. I know what you mean. But the Malamar is a whole other level.
Okay.
In a category of one.
Give us another chance,
once
Max.
Travel
give
is
give
a
New
thing
Yorkers
again,
another chance.
I'll do that.
And I'm sure I couldn't even mail them to you. They'd probably just, you know, just you just get a lot of slush. So you could approximate it with some cacao nibs.
Exactly. I'll try my best.
Well, again, John, Max, thanks for the time. This was absolutely great.
Thank you.
Likewise. That was fun.
Yeah. Y'all have a great chemistry. Y'all should...
Did you do a podcast?
Yeah. Produce a bunch of other stuff.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Jamie Collazo.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. You know how to do that. You know all of the kind things to tell us. We really need affirmations. So if you want to do your kind deed of the day, this is one that that I think would be a good one. We'd love to hear from you. So you can also reach out to us by calling 347-687-8109. And you can leave a voicemail or you can write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.
See you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.